हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थो मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sri Krishna Sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarna 2, The Glories of the Eternal Associates of Krishna, page 102. Sukha-paha means easily attained. The Lord, the son of Yashoda, is not easily attained by austerity for persons who think they are in the body, who think that they are the body, dehi-nam. But he's attainable to some degree by them after a long time. When they purify their hearts, and by offering their austerity to him by pure intelligence produced by the chance glance of devotees. Right, so it's still again you see is the path of jnana, just like the path of karma, only gives its actual results in the context of devotional service and devotees. Like that. It's designed like that. So that's why you see is the mundane piety, mundane endeavor for knowledge or perform proper performance of your duties or the proper performance means any of these things, austerities, that it's all in line with the idea that this could be connected to devotional service. Right? That's the whole idea. That's what you're trying to do. So we'll take it, we're conditioned, so we look at it that this is normal. Devotional service is the new kid on the block, right? But actually devotional service is the actual thing. And because we're not interested in devotional service, but we're interested in the activities of the spiritual world. Therefore, the closer the activities are and the more, the better the mentality is, that has the qualities and attitude and you know, the mechanical endeavor more similar to the spiritual world, so that it can be used in Krishna's service. That's called piety in the material platform. But we take it that that's the real thing, because you do this to get the material benefit. While devotional service is this kind of esoteric, kind of heady thing for sentimentalists. You know, does that make sense? You know, hence the idea that before it would be, you know, who's doing some direct service very nicely, who's you know, situated nicely in devotional service, you know, the attitude is nice in devotional service, has done big things in devotional service, that kind of attitude, that would be more the aspect of someone's qualification. But you see with time that it's more about, oh no, but he has this degree or he has this knowledge or he has this material experience, that becomes more important sometimes than devotional service and deciding on who's in a senior position. That's the residue left over from being in the material conditioning, that we just think karma and jnana is real and bhakti is kind of a sentimental kind of thing. You know, it's just like, let's say you go into engineering. Have you ever heard any karmi ever come to you and go, but what if everybody becomes an engineer? How will the world go on? You know, we need all kinds of things. You know, just engineers, how will that... But if you do bhakti, if everybody comes a devotee, how will the world... So nobody says all these things.
I think it's called utopia.
Yeah. But utopia doesn't exist here. Utopia is a real thing. That's the spiritual world. I was just thinking this morning about, you know, ads. Sometimes it's so obvious. I mean, now they're sometimes clever and do other things. But it's so obvious that it's actors and people are smiling because they're being paid to. It's obvious, and sometimes the context is so outrageous, you know it can't be. But you're interested. Why? Because the context of that you can be happy in the material world is also an illusion. It's not real. But we want to believe that it can be. So therefore, even if somebody does a bogus thing, you know, it's just like if, like Prabhupada was talking about, I think it was Prabodhananda Saraswati, he's talking about preaching. You know, you take that very humble mood and you appreciate the person that you're speaking to, how intelligent or how qualified or all these things are. You know, so that you have so many good qualities, all this and that, you know, so that, because even though they're not, they want to hear it. If you tell them, oh, you're the most, if you tell any of these rich people you're the richest in the world, they're happy to hear it, even though they're not. Or you're the most intelligent, even though they're not. You're the most powerful, the most qualified. Everybody wants to hear it, even though they're not. Right? Yeah. Like that. Because they know that there's other people who are smarter than them. But if you tell them that, then they're happy. Right? So, this kind of aspect that we appreciate. We want to think, so then the preaching. And then he says after that, then, okay, so you have all these good qualifications and all these things, that's great, but leave that aside. Because more important is you as the soul in your relationship with God. It's a very interesting approach. The Prabhupada was saying, Prabhupada Ananda Saraswati Thakur shows us how to preach. Yeah. He's saying, you have all that, rather than, all this is useless and all that, just saying, you have all that. But, consider this. Right? Instead of just taking that down and then putting devotional service, no, keep that there, but devotional service is above. So that way then, you know, the two can work nicely. Why? Because all these other things are simply ornaments on devotional service. If someone does have knowledge and skills and all these different things, that's an ornament in their devotional service. It's not the devotional service, but it's something that can very nicely be used in devotional service. Right? So when it is, then it becomes useful, and if it's not, it's not. It just probably gives the example. You have your finger. You know, it's so important, but if the finger's cut off and all that, then nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the whole thing, is that the finger's meant to work with the whole body, but if it's not, it's useless. If it's connected, it's useful. So that's the way karma and jnana and yoga are. When they're connected to Krishna, they become useful, and if they're not, they're useless. We think, no, but if it's useful, it's always useful. No, it's only if it's... Because devotional service is the real thing. So here we see is that he's not, Krishna's not easily attained by, you know, by austerity and people who are, you know, situated on that devotion, that physical platform, though they're doing things in connection with him. So after a long time of getting purified, then they'll be able to appreciate the association of devotees and what is gained by them, from them, and then surrender and offer one's austerity to Krishna. Then you get the benefit. So in other words, by doing that, you get purified. The only benefit is that the purification is only more useful in that you can use it, it can be more valuable in your thinking that devotional service may be more important. But that switch is only going to come from the devotees. Because devotional service is shuddha-sattva. The material is only up to sattva. There's no entrance. Just because you're in goodness doesn't mean you'll understand devotional service. No. Does that make sense? You know, otherwise the cows would all be doing kirtan. Right? They have a body in the mode of goodness. So that's the point is that it's only when it gets touched by the chit potency coming from the devotees, then karma, jnana, and yoga have some benefit. Now, by performing them, that brings you to goodness. If you, you know, the right attitude, right knowledge, the right, you know, from scripture, doing everything very nicely. But it's still only when it touches devotees that it makes the cross. So therefore, if that's there, why would these things be the prominent rather than the ornament? Right? The ornament's the secondary, not the primary. Does that make sense? That you can tell the, it's just like for Krishna, the ornaments become more beautiful connected to him. So the ornament shines because it's connected to Krishna. So therefore these things shine because they're connected to devotional service. And if they're not, then they're gone. So, yes.
I think in the 11th canto, it is mentioned that devotion of the soul, it's a very subtle thing. We can't really understand who is on what level of devotional service, because it's an internal thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is mentioned that by external symptoms,
mm-hmm.
we look at jnana and vairagya.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this, to a certain degree, it's not like 100%,
mm-hmm.
certain degree indicates, you know, what is the level of devotion. People are renounced and people are knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we just recently read that Vasudev represents Vasudev Sattva.
Mm-hmm.
Then Krishna appears in his mind, then he's transferred to the Devaki.
Her mind, then to
her
heart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So still sometimes devotees, it's really difficult to understand how do we practice, although we practice pure devotional service as the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
What about those things, you know, vairagya and jnana and achieving Vasudev Sattva, because acharyas, they actually say, before you achieve that level, Krishna won't appear.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a dirty place, how will he appear?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, how can we balance those things? Mm-hmm.
Yes, but what's the purifying effect is that these are activities connected with devotional service. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's like, let's say you're going in the kitchen. Okay. Then, if you go into the kitchen, let's say you're going to make potato latkes. Right? Okay. Now, are you going to be using the knife to cut up the potatoes? Yes or no?
Yes.
Or are you going to use the grater? The grater, right? So the point is you use something when it's needed. You use the frying pan when you're doing that. You use a different pot when you're boiling things.
Mm-hmm.
You use the kettle when you're just heating up something for some tea. You use the toaster when you're toasting bread. Right? I don't pour water into the toaster and then, you know, technically it should be able to heat it up, you know. But, you know, unfortunately because of lack of waterproofing and all that, and it may not work. One, it'll just go out the bottom, and two, it'll short circuit. But does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're using something when it's useful. That's the point of Yukta Vairagya. It's only when it's useful is it used. Not because I have it, therefore it's useful. It's only when it's engaged. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the whole aspect there is that purity is useful because of its assistance in devotional service. It's not that purity creates the devotion. The purity, and what are you doing, the knowledge and austerity to get purified, where does those come from? They come from devotional service. They don't come from somewhere else. Right?
Yeah.
And so therefore, their power, just the external power, is still coming from devotional service. And then you add the devotion. You know, it's just like you reflect something, the reflection is coming from the original. But that's on the external form. So jnana and vairagya is that external form. Then you add devotion, then it has some meaning. So, you know, or a wire. You know, let's say I have tons of wire, but unless electricity is going through it, does it have any value? You know, unless maybe you work for the mafia, then, you know, short pieces have their value now and again. No?
Yeah.
So that's the point, or is that unless it can be properly engaged, it doesn't have a value on its own. You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, you take one of these, you know, sci-fi scenarios. Somehow or another, there's no people on the planet. Nothing. You're the only one there. So everything's open. You can do anything you want. So how long are you going to do all the crazy things? You know, go, okay, we're going to go into the Ferrari shop and drive around a Ferrari. But actually, if you want to get from point A to point B, are you going to drive the Ferrari? No, you're going to probably use, you know, something else, a Land Rover, you know, some kind of bigger thing with big wheels and can get over bumps. Store stuff, you can put stuff in. It's comfortable to ride for a long time. But you'll have that thing, and for a few days you'll do it, you know. Go in front of, you know, do donuts in the you know, the lawn and library and, you know, all that kind of jazz. But then you're going to stop because it doesn't actually do any, it doesn't have any meaning. It'll just get down to what works. So we have these, we're enamored with the material energy that this could be this and that could be that. But in reality, devotional service means just using what you need to use. That's why we say it's not dependent on the rules. It's what's useful. That's what you use. You know, so a good cook goes into the kitchen according to the prep, you know, how many people they're cooking for, you know, the way that they're doing it, the techniques that they're using, they'll choose what their the instruments that they use. You know, the ingredients, all that. That'll all be chosen by that. Right? Laborers are built, helped with something out, you know, building and all that, and you want to feed them. What rice are you going to cook? You're going to cook basmati, or you're going to cook, you know, one of those big fat rice. Right? One, they don't like basmati. And, you know, it's so much more expensive. Why would you waste money on something nice and for us that they wouldn't consider nice? You do the other. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just according to what you're doing. That's intelligence. When it's no, we always do this, you know, so. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you wouldn't, that's devotional service. So one has to know where everything comes from. If the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, whatever is, you could say, in goodness that's recommended, and that's the higher end of the scale, that's the more the natural reflection from the spiritual world. Then you have the derivatives of that due to our, you know, distortion and perversions and all that of the material mentality. So then it starts getting, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, the boys would just pick up a stick and hit some, you know, fruit with it. You know, down here then you have to have, carbon fiber golf clubs to hit that little ball, you know. They don't have to worry about that. That's a distortion of it. The principle of sporting and all that's there. But for them it's just some fun, but here they take it so seriously. So the original, that's why then the Vedic culture is recommended, because it's closer to the original. But you have to know the principle of what you're working with. Means there's a certain thing you're trying to obtain in service to Krishna, and it has a particular mood in that, therefore you use the right instruments. So therefore Mother Jashoda, in her pure mood, she's the best. She uses the right instruments for parental rasa. Right? You know, the cowherd boys use the best for friendship, and like this, the saintly person is used the best for Shanta. Right? So there's no problem there. They use the best, so therefore those are the best here. But then we take it beyond that into something that gets distorted. Right? The amount of wealth Yudhishthira Maharaj has is ridiculous. There's no one on the planet today that even comes anywhere near. I mean, I probably, if you took them all together and put them in a pile, they still wouldn't have how much he had. Duryodhana, who's a gross materialist who has as much as possible he can, and he's only satisfied with the most, is impressed to the point of depression on how much wealth is there. He doesn't have people coming. Kings are there, you know, in line with their, you know, chariots, waiting to give their gifts. And he has to tell them, wait, you know, this guy was here first, he's unloading. No, but I'm, you know, no, but he's here. You know, he's having to tell kings of the world that they just want to give. No one's coming to Duryodhana like that. You know, it's time to pay their tax, to pay. There's a reason for it. But here, they want to give him. And they give him 1,000. If they're giving chariots, they give 1,000. They're giving elephants, 1,000. They're giving, you know, those gold bars. They're giving 1,000. And he has to carry it. You know, 1,000 gold bars like that, you know? I mean, this big and that thick is 1 kilo. You know, so the ones that are like this that we see like that, you know, I'm not sure what they are, but they must be like 30, 40 kilos or 50 kilos. And he has 1,000 of those he has to move. And he does it all day. He's tired. He has the strength of 10,000 elephants. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, what he has now, that wealth, now what's he doing with it? He's feeding 100,000 Brahmins at a time, the best food with the best ingredients, maximum amount of people serving and all that. And there's 100,000 people there. There's probably, there could easily be 5,000 to 10,000 people serving, if you want to do it right. Like, you know, not our standard, three people, you know. You know, or just put all the buckets on the side and all the Brahmins can just get in line and eat. Yeah, we feed 100,000 at a time, right, you know. Yeah, so, like that. And so, thousands of people that are doing that. And that means, that, and how many times can they serve? Right, the Brahmins will come once, eat and go away. But these servers will be doing, so you're going to have probably 100,000 people engaged in that so they can keep changing. You know, and that's, you know, the cooks, or this, or that, everything. I mean, it's huge, or maybe even more. And that's 100,000. And then as soon as they're finished, the next batch. And that's going on all day, morning to night. So he's feeding millions of Brahmins a day. Best food. You know, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about high-end wedding food. That's what we're talking. May not have that many varieties because you're serving nicely and the Brahmins aren't, you know, it's not that big. They'd rather eat a few nice preps than, you know, just look at a whole bunch that they're not going to eat. You know, but still, you're talking about first class stuff. You know, that quality. Whatever is the best you can make it, if you're giving them a sweet one, what's the best it can be? What's the best everything can be? And that's what he's giving there. Then, that's just feeding them. Then he's going to be giving them cows and gold and all other things like this in charity. And that's what he's doing. So, that much wealth, that much charity. And that much sacrifice. Right? It means, if you're inviting Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and everybody from all over the universe, you have to have some nice arrangement for it. Because it goes on, I don't think it's a one-sitting program. I would expect they're there for some days. So you have to have a place that Brahma's going to be comfortable in. You know, I mean, the doors have to be high enough. You can walk through it, you know. No? You know, you have to have a bathroom with mirrors on all four walls so he can, you know, see what he's doing. So, the arrangements he's making, who makes that kind of arrangement? You know, people say they're giving in charity. Yeah, they're giving mosquito nets to some kids in Africa. Important. Very good work. But are they giving charity to tens of thousands of let's say, you know, teachers and academics that, you know, are underpaid because somehow or another people think that's the way it should be? Is he giving charity to them? No. You know, so certain key things people give, and that's good. That's good that they do that. But they're not giving on the level of charity, like. No? You know, you hear them give 5 million, 10 million, 30 million, 100 million. But if they've got billions and billions, what's how much is that? You know? It's not that much. You know, Vedic recommends 50% in charity. They're not even giving 1,000. You know, but it's big, you know, for here. So it's good. Charity is good. But what we're trying to say is that the qualities that are there, you only see that when you add that devotional element. You know, you see that there are people who are big in charity, like Nariga, but it doesn't so much talk about so much what he's doing. Because it's on the mundane platform. He's doing big work. You know, Karna, he's giving, you know, a little bit's mentioned. Yudhishthira detail is there because it's devotional. Right? So this whole idea that material has value on its own, no. It's one of Krishna's energies. That's its only value. And when you use it in Krishna's service, that's where it actually has its value. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like, let's say you have some very nice, I don't know, some special kind of, you know, item that for holding thing, or it's very nicely carved, or something special or old or unique or something like that. But the kids will use it for, you know, banging, you know, a Lego into place. And so when you consider, yes, that's the real use of it, but it does a great job. You know, they're building the little things, it won't go in right like that, so they bang it with the thing. No, you wouldn't consider that. So that's the whole point. It's even though the knowledge and the austerity and the yoga and the, you know, the piety is being engaged, but until it's connected to Krishna, it doesn't actually have any real value. Because when you die, you can't take it with you. It means literally. Right, you know. It's not that you hear in Bhagavatam that when they're talking in the chapter when the you know, the elder in the family is leaving his body and everybody's standing around, you know, with the crocodile tears and all that. Do you hear that in the comments? Somebody's, you know, the grandmother is telling the wife and the eldest son, it says, stand close to him on either side, make sure he keeps his hands open when he dies. Because if he can close his hand, then he can take everything with him, you know. When he goes, and suddenly all the things from the room just disappear, you know, all the money, everything just goes, right? Isn't it? Isn't that how it works?
Fortune.
Yeah, so that's why you see when they're dead, they put their hands like this in the West, you know, because they have an open hand, they can't grab anything, you know. Keep your hands away, you know.
Only in Egypt. Only in Egypt.
Yeah. You know. But you understand. Yeah, so the whole point is they do it here, Christians do it like this, like that. You know. Like that. You know, he's there with the bag with money in it, gold coins, you know, holding it. You know. Now that's the Goldberg I know. So, is that, in other words, there are things within the material world that within it, karma, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, you can purify and uplift yourself, but they can't get you to the spiritual platform. So only the spiritual platform can take it across. So you can't say that, no, it's the... unless you're purified in that, it won't. Yes, unless you're purified, but what purification are you going to use? What austerities are they? You hear about the austerities that they're doing. You know? Is that how you say? Like summertime, the austerity. You know, how you say sitting in the midst of five cool items, right? You know, you got your AC on, you got the fan on, you got your cold drink. You know, you got the, you know, isn't that the, you know, those, these are the austerities that are talked about in the Bhagavatam, right? You know, that's the summertime one. Right? You know, in the winter that you immerse yourself up to the neck, you know, in warm clothes, right? You know, so. No? Yeah, so the whole thing is, what are we going to do? You know, that 20 minutes of yoga is what's going to purify you? You know, to make you qualify for devotional service, or... You know, it means if we're talking realistically, he is saying, you know, it's not after a long time. So that's just that degree, but it's devotional service. Now, if someone performs devotional service, that same purification of the heart is taken care of, you know, unlimitedly quicker. Right? You know, it says yogis can drill the respiration millions of lifetimes and not see the effulgence off of the toenail of Krishna. But they've situated themselves in goodness. So we have to understand, because otherwise we so easily get attracted by, oh goodness, that good lifestyle and all that, as we sit in our cities living our rajasic, tamasic lifestyle. You know, I don't mind, you know, guys sitting under a rock out in the country, or, you know, doing, you know, making dandelion, wreaths and putting them on their head and dancing in the open fields, you know, and they live out there and they grow their own food. Okay, they may be able to say, you know, no, but we have to live this simple life. Okay, great. These guys could say it, but it's still not fully true. You know what I'm saying? No?
Yeah.
So in other words, we overrate our qualifications and qualifications of the material world, and somehow or another project that's what's going to make devotional service so nice. But no, devotional service makes devotional service nice. Right?
It's an independent value.
It's an independent value. It's just like, let's say in the economic community, is there not a saying, money comes from money? Right? No investment. Are you going to make money? No. It's only because there's investment. So with money, with value, you get value. Right? I'm growing food. I just go out there and put anything on the ground and I get sabji. Or do I have to put the particular seeds or the particular cuttings of that vegetable? Right? Does that make sense? You know, can I cut up potatoes and, you know, keep them in the dark, right? You know, then when they grow all those little things and cut them up into pieces and go out and put them in the fields, you know, nicely all spaced out and all that. And after they come up, then I'm going to get the, you know, high-class date trees or olive trees, right? Very good, right? Yeah, or an avocado or like that, or, you know, a variety, you know, they can, as they please, you know. This is the context, right? You know, our pistachios. You know.
Liberal, free range, organic things.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. Oh, Krishna. So, yeah. And free trade. Mm-hmm. Yes, has to be free trade also.
Fair trade.
Fair trade, free range. Technically, free range means they have to have feet so they can move around, because range means they can move. But that's always the fun, you throw that in also.
It sounds good.
Yeah, free range avocados. They can sway in the breeze as they please, but not restricted. So the... Therefore, why it means even here... You have the knowledge in a particular, or you apply it in the particular way according to the rules of that thing, then you get results. Why would you think that something else is going to produce bhakti? No, bhakti will produce bhakti. So that's why it says, by the chance glance of devotees. That's what Prabhupada says, causeless mercy. You know. You know, devotees went down and did Harinam. You just went to the beach. You were not planning on hearing the holy name. You just went to the beach, but because the devotees are there, therefore you heard the holy name. So when it's there, then you get the balance. So therefore, how much of these things to use? How much of the knowledge? How much austerities? You know, how much of the particular kind of skilled endeavor, you know? Like that, how much, whatever is useful. Not more, not less. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's what works. This thing, no, because you have that, it'll work. No. If you have devotion, it'll work. Because even if you don't have, just like we saw that Brahman, he can't read Bhagavad Gita. He can't read. But he's sitting every day and going through the pages of Bhagavad Gita. Right? And all the local Brahmins are laughing at him because they all know he can't read. And he's not saying he can't read. He can read. But his guru told him to read every day, so he doesn't know how to read, so he just sits with it and every day goes through. But because he has that devotion, he appreciates the mood of service and exchange of love between Arjuna and Krishna. Therefore, he's actually attained the perfection of reading Gita, even though he's not actually technically able to read it. So those Brahmins are scholars, because if they weren't scholars, why would they goof on him? Or the guys who actually aren't that good, but think themselves scholars, so they'll goof on him to make themselves look better. But in any case, none of them are developing that love for Krishna. And this guy is. So this thing is that, oh no, we have to have a professional do this. It's like, I've very rarely ever seen a professional do something proper professionally. You know, in Krishna consciousness, literally. I've never seen. I've seen people who have professional backgrounds, have the knowledge and skill, don't identify with it, don't project it, don't use the attitude, and get amazing things done because they have the experience, but because they're doing a devotional service, they're for Krishna vows. I've seen professionals completely lose it because they can't get anything done. And they'll blame, you know, it's like the dancer blaming the floor stripper.
Well, in Russian, we have a bit grosser interpretation of that thing. I can't mention.
Okay, yeah. No, I can imagine it would be like that. Yeah, he'll blame the situation.
Yeah.
The shoes. The shoes, okay. Yeah, you know something. It's just something is wrong. Because they'll say, oh, these people aren't disciplined, are they? But if you're such a good manager, why aren't you able to make them disciplined? Otherwise, are you a real manager? If you could only use people that have an MBA, and then you can organize them, you know, whoopee, you know, nice, you're in that situation, you have the piety, you're working with them. But the point is in reality, you know, you can't check farther down than them because you don't know how. So the guy that can come in with nothing and then create the whole thing. You know? That's why people like Napoleon are considered, because he starts with nothing and then builds an empire.
And ends
with
nothing.
Sorry?
Ends with nothing.
Yeah, it ends with nothing. You know? That's what we mean. You come with nothing, you go with nothing. So that's the point. So you only use that much of the example that's worthwhile, because the rest of it is like, you know. Yeah.
Chanakya built and it stays for 1,000 years.
Yes, Chanakya works good. So the aspect is they can take and they can do with what's there. But I mean, I've literally seen in Mayapur, guys, big managers, big this, big bhakwa, they come here, they can't do anything. I mean, they can't function. You know? While you see just some guy off the road in America, then he comes here and this and that within a short time, and he's speaking the local language, he's doing things, he's getting things done. Like that. So this whole point is it's the devotion, not the material qualification. So?
Yeah. When you mentioned Prabhupada Saraswati, that verse, you know, saying it's good, but just leave it aside, and the Sara Dharma Pratitya verse came up in my mind.
Mm.
So probably, you know, others, they read, you know, first part of the Gita or the later part, not the middle part, but they didn't get yet to that verse because it's right at the end.
Mm.
Because it's the same point.
Yes,
and
yes.
Whatever dharma, whatever skills or whatever knowledge you have for Krishna, you have to live it and move on in devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this is the key point. And now devotees are fascinated with, you know, whatever qualities are there in the material world, but it's just a reflection of the origin.
Yes, yes. I mean, they have to also remember is that not that those qualities that are those qualities or skills or positions or influence that they're enamored by. It's not that it doesn't have an origin in reality, because it's Krishna's potency, it's his opulences. You know, and because dead matter is not going to do anything, Krishna. You know, it's like, you know, here you have this nice shine on here, but that shine is Krishna. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it's just dead matter. You know? So Krishna is the shine. Krishna is the thing. Krishna is the practical. Krishna is the, you know, you say, no, but they're so practical. The practicalness of them is Krishna. But if you don't see it connected to Krishna, you can't necessarily use it for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's an attitude that when it's done in that particular attitude, then Krishna is pleased with it. That humility, that this and that. Because otherwise, I think, yeah, I'm a professional, but how professional are you compared to, you know, some of these big people in the world here that we know? And then compare that to, you know, the demigods. You know, there's a demigod that deals with all the blinking of all the eyes of everybody in the universe. Now that's some serious management. No?
Yeah.
So that's that, you know, we can't compare. But you see, is when they have pride, nothing. When Indra is proud, there's no glory. You know. Then when we surrender to Krishna, you know, with Sarabi, then we see, then that's the part where then he's seen in a good light. Now Krishna's quiet because he behaved badly. You know, or in the Upanishad where he's talking about Indra, you know, you have to worship Indra, meaning not him, because the potency, his potency of the post of Indra comes from the real Indra, Krishna. So you have to worship that person. You know, you appreciate power, worship that person, they have the power. So, yeah. So that if that's there, then one can engage, you can see. That's the difference between the smarta and the devotee. They're both following the rules and regulations that are there within the varnashram and the pancha and all these things. But they use the ones that are useful in devotional service, and the ones that are not, they drop. So, you know, so therefore, like worshipping the forefathers, we don't do that. You know, the whole Bali Dan and all those kind of things like that. We don't do all those things. We just offer it to Krishna and Hari Bala. Does that make sense? So that's what I'm saying. The whole Varnashram system, you can't use that. It's only what's useful in devotional service, that much is kept and is used. He is not easily attained by jnanis, jnani-nam, who extinguish the conception of the body and develop oneness alone, atma-bhutam. Right, so if all they do is extinguish the conception of the body, they start with that bodily, they come up with it, get rid of that, but they only absorbed in that oneness and all that. So how will they attain Krishna? He's a person. They're saying it's all one. You know? He is slightly available to those who understand that he is the source of Brahman by the gains from pure intelligence, the glance of devotees. Right? So hearing from them, then he starts to get. You know. So we see these big, big jnanis, when they hear from the Lord, hear from the devotees, then they start to get some, you know, the intelligence. Then they start using their spiritual intelligence. Otherwise, they're only using their material intelligence. That's why you can have a very simple person can be advanced in devotional service because they're using spiritual intelligence. Right? While the jnani, he's proud of his material intelligence. That's why they think, oh, they have a PhD. That's material intelligence. That you see its connection to Krishna, can use it in that way, that may be the spiritual. But that you can sit down and do a PhD, that's material intelligence. That's your conditioning. You have that conditioning, you can do it. You don't, you can't. You know, same time, many times those PhDs, there's other things they can't do that are just normal things.
Setting the microscope in the lab.
Yeah, really, they have a technician come in. Yeah. You know, and so these are, you know, big professors, and they can't do ordinary stuff. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's according to your conditioning, so that they're proud of their conditioning. Oh, it's academic, therefore they can do. It's like, since when? Since when? You think that all those people weren't scholars who wrote those other, 645 translations of Bhagavad Gita? You know, with commentaries? Of course so. But what's the point? Useless. Not one devotee from any of them. Yeah. Because of the inferiority of these two methods, quote-unquote, attaining the Lord, in this case, means only realizing him partially. So they can only get it partially, you know, some aspect of sat, some aspect of chit. You know, so in glance of the devotee, then they'll get the sat, that a little bit of chit, you know, that he's a person, he's this, that. They won't get beyond. It is not direct realization of Krishna. That is the meaning when Krishna says, take prap nuvanti mam eva sarva bhuta hite rataha. The jnanis also attain me. Bhagavad Gita 12:4. Klesho dikaras te sham avyakta shakta chetasam. Klesho dikataras. Okay. For those who are embodied, the path of jnana is difficult, but they ultimately attain me. Bhagavad Gita 12:5 means they ultimately attain, they get some realization. But that's coming because of the glance of the devotees. Then taking that glance, now they have that realization, now they put more emphasis on that association of devotees, then they can move forward and realize. But by that path, they won't get any more than that. They can't. One is, it won't even bring them to that without the glance of the devotees and it being authorized, you know, path is, you know, elements of devotional service. At the same time, as they can only get up to that point to get from there to prema, that they have to use devotional service. They can't use those things anymore. Yeah. Though I have become very proficient in the Vedas and have realized Brahman by proper methods, it is not enough. Please consider this. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5-7. You have not sufficiently described the glories of the spotless Lord Krishna, because your mind could never be satisfied with Vedanta. I think that writing the Vedanta Sutras is insufficient. Right? It doesn't mean it's useless, it's just insufficient, because the point is you're trying to bring people away from misunderstandings of Chitta Chit Ishwara. Right? And then understanding what is proper elevation, proper goal. They have insufficient knowledge of that. It's to get rid of that, defeat all that. But until you describe the pastimes of the Lord, the glories of the Lord, then you haven't actually done what the Vedic literature is for. It's to bring people to devotional service. The Vedanta Sutra is to remove the obstacles to devotional service that we have from conditioning. Right? For whom is he easily available? He is easily attained by devotees of the son of Jashoda. Quote, those who give up attempts to understand your powers, who live constantly in devotional association, and who pass their lives respecting topics about you and your associates with the ear, thy body, mind, and words, which they proclaim loudly, bring you under control, though you cannot be controlled by anyone in the three worlds. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.3. Quote, using this mantra indicating the four forms, one worships the deity who is the subject of the dhyana mantra, the Lord worthy of worship, who is worthy of being seen. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.38. Thus Krishna is easily attained by Jashoda. He is her son, Gopika Sutaha. Sukabaha. This one doesn't have the long A. Sukapaha. Is that just missing or it's a different form? Yeah, because sometimes it can also be just different. Because you can have Sukha Paha or Sukha Apaha. I don't know, you know who it's. Oh, maybe Apaha is not easily attained. And Sukha Paha means one who attains. Okay. He who awards happiness. He does not give happiness to those who identify with the body, because to them he is the mere son of a coward woman. They do not respect his pastimes as her son, seeing them as material. He does not give happiness to the jnanis because they see him as the son of a coward woman, not Brahman. They do not appreciate the meaning of his pastimes conveying various aspects of the Lord's bliss, since they realize everything is one. He gives bliss to the devotees of Krishna. Right, so they just see him, you know, son of a coward woman, and that's all they see. They don't see anything more. He's, you know, they don't see him, that they see as materially. He's not Brahman. Or it's not an elevated position. You know, they're big jnanis. He's not there, like this. Or Sukabaha can mean who is easily known. He is not easily understood by those who identify with the body and engage in logical arguments. He is not, because you can say, but their logical art doesn't mean they're engaged with the body, but they identify as scholars. So the scholar is the conditioned nature, not the soul. Right? He's not easily known by jnana or the jnanis, since he is the son of a coward woman. He is understood by jnanis if this form is unobstructed by the concept of Brahman, because he performs astonishing activities. But even then, he is not as easily understood by them as he is by the devotees of Krishna. Right, so if they don't think that, you know, they're trying to merge in Brahman, they see he is Brahman, okay, and they're Brahman, everything's Brahman, okay, then there's not so much of an obstruction there. But then but it's not as easily as understood. They have to go through great, great austerity, great, great trouble to get to the position they're in. While the devotees, then they don't have to go through so much trouble because they already accept their surrender to Krishna.
Can we accept some tattva and then later understand it? Is it actually possible?
Yeah, it means that's the whole point of shravana. The first stage of learning a shravana means you've cleared any doubts on the topic. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so you heard it, you know, it makes sense how it's explained. You know, you can see the you know that it's reasonable, and then any doubts in how you'd apply it. You know, so just like, let's say, devotees may accept that you know, karma, jnana, and yoga won't get you bhakti, but when it comes to the next stage, the practical, then that's where they start to understand it, because they start to apply and they start to see it's, no, it comes from devotion, not from. So
yeah,
and so when they do that for some time and that contemplation, it means if they don't contemplate it, then they may not understand it. That's why you can see if somebody's themselves is practicing something so nicely for so long and then suddenly they just fall away. Or they get so confused, and you think, why would they get confused? They're so fixed in their service. But it means they weren't contemplating. They were doing, they heard it, they accepted, they're doing the service, and they're going to get the benefit for that, and they're going to be purified. But because they didn't contemplate, then they don't understand. Therefore, they get confused. So, yes?
The description of Vijnanamaya Purusha. Then the basis is the pure jiva.
Oh.
The head is the faith. One needs to have the faith.
Faith, okay, faith.
And then the right hand is the intelligence.
Hmm.
And the left is, left or right, I don't know how it's. One hand is the intelligence and another hand is attempting to know the inner meaning.
Hmm.
The torso is actually realizing the inner meaning of the scripture.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, in order to realize, then first, then the basis is you should distinguish between mundane and spiritual, then you should have faith. And using the intelligence in the right mood, then we should endeavor to understand the meaning. Only then one gets to realize the inner meaning of the scriptures.
Mm. Yes. So that makes sense. So in other words, they're not using the intelligence or the analyzation to try to understand what they're doing. But they've accepted that it's good to do and they're doing it and they'll always get benefit. But the problem is without that, they don't necessarily understand what they're doing. It doesn't mean they have to be big scholars. They just have to be aware of what's going on. And now and again, think about how to improve it in quality of devotional service. Doesn't mean necessarily that the technique will improve. It may or may not. But once you get to a point that it works, you don't have to improve the particular technique. You know, it's like the guys on the side of the road, they make a particular preparation. He doesn't have to improve the quality of what he's doing, the technique. It's already perfect.
Yeah.
You know, now you can just improve the quality of the consciousness.
Right. Also, yes. The prejudice, the basis is the pure jiva, means there should not be any prejudice in our attempts.
Ah.
First and foremost thing that, and then one should have faith in the scriptures. First of all, if we approach having some ulterior motives and then with some pride and knowledge, then it's never going to start.
It can't start. Yeah, so that's why if we identify as a scholar or think I'm so, or I have a PhD, therefore, you know, I can understand, you know, things like that, then they can't understand. I've seen it in the class. A PhD was sitting in the class, and others in the class were from, you know, active devotees, you know, who are, you know, serious about their service, not necessarily big devotees, or devotees that are just very simple. And I was explaining, you know, some, you know, point like this. And everyone in the class understood it but the PhD. And the PhD was challenging it because they couldn't understand it. But when you ask everybody else, you know, I'd explain it, then explain more. I'd ask, does everybody understand? They all understand. PhD couldn't understand. Because they identified that I am intelligent, I'm a PhD. Because, I mean, I'm only saying this because once that PhD said that to me. You know, they wanted some material and I said, oh, it's not finished. You know, so until when we put it together, then we could give it to you. And they said, I'm a PhD, why won't I understand it? You know, it's like, because I'm a PhD, therefore I can understand your work, but it's in a field you don't work in. That's why you're asking for it. You know what I'm saying? That's like saying, I'm a PhD in, you know, chemistry, so, you know, therefore, you know, what you're talking about in medicine, of course I'll understand it, because I'm a PhD. He says, no, you won't. In the modern academy, they won't accept that. You can't make that claim. You know, you can't be a PhD in one department, walk into a completely different discipline, and say, you know, I'm qualified to give lecture here because I'm a PhD. They'll all tell you, get out of here. You're not, no, you're not. So the thing is, they said that, and they were very upset that we wouldn't give them the material. Because it's kind of like I'm a PhD and, you know, you're a lower level academic. Of course you would give it to me out of reverence. And this whole illusion that you're under, that I wouldn't understand what you're doing, you know, why would you think that? Because that's, that, you know, does that make sense? So that's the thing, is it's there, you can see it. It just doesn't work. So that's the thing. Now, you see others who may have these backgrounds and that, but because they're just dealing with it as devotees, then they have that analytical ability. They can come up with all kinds of angles and questions and this and that that is, shows that they really contemplate.
Yes. Also this Vedavadarata, the one who may be having faith in the Vedas, born into a traditional family, mm. You know, they have faith in the Vedas, they have intelligence, they are trying to understand the meaning, but it doesn't work out because the first thing is not there, they are not approaching from...
From that they're the soul, not the body, yeah. Because here the identification is the one, not that I'm a devotee. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, you know, we're devotees, you know, it's just like if it just says... Yeah, if it was just that, yeah, but I won't be around and you need it now and, you know, just by Krishna's grace, if that, maybe he'll let me understand. If not, then later when it's finished, if I haven't understood, then you give me the finished material and then it can do that kind of attitude, then they may have been able to work it out. And you'd be inspired to give it to them. But otherwise, you know, why would you be inspired to? You know, it's like, since when am I going, why would I give to you as an academic? Why not to some other academic?
Academics have patents.
Have?
Patents. Patent on their work. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is that if you're working as an academic, then this is our work, not your work. You know, they want to take your work and include it in their thing and get the benefit. Yeah, what to do? These things are going on. So, that makes sense. So you have to identify as a devotee, as a servant of Krishna. Then these things will work. So that makes sense? Then they work. But otherwise, if you don't, they can't work. Because Krishna is beyond material intelligence. But at the same time, as he is the potency that makes material intelligence work. But he only makes it work within the realm of material, within the sphere that your intelligence is, has the nature of. Does that make sense? You have intelligence, like I've seen it also, let's say, in students. Someone pointed this out to me, that I don't know how much is there now or how much they talk about it, but people kind of have a general, the way their intelligence works, their brain works, that works more for language or more for math.
Yes.
Some can do both, and there are those who can do neither.
Yeah. Many?
Yes, many who can do neither. 2 plus 2. Wait, 1 second. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. You know, I'm still trying to remember that. There's this, the things that I think it gets into the 50s and 60s. Seven times. What is it? Seven times. Maybe 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
9 times 6. Mm-hmm. There's that one group, and there's the ones at the beginning you know, and the ones at the end you know. But there's that group right in the middle around the 50s and 60s. That's the one you know. It's like,
we made a chart, yeah. And I have put a bold in red for the boys, that these are the most important, you should never forget. And when you ask, they again forget this.
Don't forget those. Yeah,
somehow it's a mystical.
Yeah, because you know, one of them's 63, one of them's 56, but
one is 54.
54, yes, one's 54 because the 49 you know, and the 64 you know, and generally I remember the 42, but yeah, also yeah, 45, but it's just, there's this ones in the middle. They just they are my God.
54, 56, and 63.
These, yeah, these. So it's three of them. Okay, so I'll have to look at that specifically. Yeah, so that's the thing. He's easily known by devotees because they give up the bodily attack. You give up all dharmas because I'm a scholar, or I'm a Brahmin, or I'm a wealthy person, or I'm a professional. you know, or I'm a Westerner, or I'm this, I'm you know, like they are, or we're Indians. You don't have to tell us about Bhagavad Gita. We're born knowing Bhagavad Gita. So it's like, yeah, right. You know, it's like that. You have all these different things because they identify with the body. So Vijnana Moya, they're not functioning at that platform. If they identify with it, they are not on the platform of Vijnana Moya. Because Vijnana Moya, the first point is you identify as the soul. That's what makes the difference. Manamoy, then the point is you're following the laws of God. Why you're doing it, that's another question, but you're following them. Pranamoy is you care that sense gratification should be available for everybody, at least within who you care about. And Anamoy is the sense gratification is for me. It's very, very specific, and when you have those, then you can expand from there. And it may be higher level or lower level, or they have some mixes. But as soon as it's, you know, oh, I'm this, then oh, that's not Vijnana Moya. So therefore, since sadhana bhakti is its standard place is Vijnana Moya, and then from there you're attempting for the Ananda Maya, then we're not going to be able to talk devotional service very nicely here, because they're viewing it from a lower level of consciousness. And there's a good chance, if they're not from a traditional family and all that, like Prabhu said, they're not going to use Manamoya. They're going to drop down to pranamoy. And much of the time, anamoy, but you cloak it so it looks like it's pranamoy when actually it's not. You know, because you can see is you may be using the technique of pranamoy, but then there's the purpose of the thing, what you're trying to obtain. So if you're trying to obtain, I will get a position from this, then even though it looks like they're doing a nice thing in pranamoy, it's actually for anamoy.
Yeah. On this example from the Upanishads, do we have to obtain all the features in order to realize the Purush? Is that the purpose? Or I'm not clear what's the.
I would say as you start on this understanding that we're the soul, not the body, and actually the analyzations based on that, you're working on the platform. Then as you start using the intelligence, that you try to understand what's going on there, that you develop that faith in it, then it will just develop, and then you'll be...
I mean, I just don't remember the background, why those... Because they all explain it in one place, one after another.
That's Taittiriya Upanishad.
That's the
Purushas for the Anamaya Purush, the Manamaya Purush, the Vijnanamaya Purush. So they have the form, because otherwise we'll say Anamaya, but how do you define exactly what's Anamaya? You say it's sense gratification, but then within that, then there's the thing is what's the essential point? You know, there's always going to be the heart, the torso, the two arms, and the head. Like that. And depending on what it is, legs may be defined on how it runs. You know, just how you apply it. Mm. You know. That's there. So then those will be there. Then you understand very clearly how it's applied. Or what to avoid.
Yeah.
Because by using the Anandamaya Purush, then you're going to be situated on transcendence. At least by the Vijnanamaya Purusha, you can understand how to situate yourself spiritually so that you can take advantage of the transcendental. So?
Yeah. Because what you explained previously, I think it's the acceptance and the understanding are very closely connected, because in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada...
Understanding and acceptance. Okay.
Acceptance and understanding. Yeah. And Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning, he says, even theoretically, you have to, you have to accept first.
Yes.
Then you might understand. It might not happen.
Yes.
But then there's a chance. But like you explained, because even a simple devotee, they accept first.
Mm-hmm.
Then the understanding develops. Whatever it is.
Yes.
But with the academics, it's they argue. You can see they didn't accept the pratikya, the initial statement.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. And then they argue. So technically, their thinking process is much more developed.
Yes.
But because they didn't accept in the beginning whatever, you know, whatever truth was mm-hmm. installed, mm-hmm. then the whole thing is not going anywhere.
No. Yeah, hence you'll have that the person's intelligent enough to run a whole Bhagavad Gita course. And the people in the course are starting to understand more and more about the structure and the progression of the Gita and what the points that are going on and all that, and bring out things that the acharyas say. But at the end of the day, as far as developing faith and all that, they can't give because they don't have faith. They don't have. So you can't understand. And how do you understand these things? That is through devotional service. Because that's the thing, because even the attachment they're going for, that they're saying, no, but I would choose the morality. But the thing is that they're choosing probably anamoy pranamoy morality. They're not actually accepting the morality that Arjuna's talking on. It's a manamoy morality. Right? He's going to get the benefit of some dharma, comes artha and kama. But it's still situated there. Like he's worried about, the ladies will be polluted and all that. So does that person who's saying that believes that, the ladies should be taken care of very nicely and everything like this? Does he believe that? And if he doesn't, then that very point that he's arguing on, he's not actually even on the level of moral understanding or consciousness that Arjuna's at, which is considered a fallen position for devotional service. So therefore, then it would be a problem. So that's the thing, is if you're intelligent, you can bluff in academic spheres. But as you hear, like I remember hearing one guy saying, about Dasara, and it wasn't a big thing that it was, that's the day Ram killed Ravana. Because he's putting, well, you put this in this calculation, like the other day, so we heard, I think it was, we had heard here, that Sanjaya came back and told Dhritarashtra about the battle, which is 100% bogus. He was sitting with Dhritarashtra in Dhritarashtra's chamber at the same time the battle was going on and explaining it from there. That's why Prabhupada so many times said, it's just like, transcendental television in the heart, that Vyasadeva gave the benediction because he came to see him. To try one last thing, that it's not too late, you can call them back. It's not too late, you can't send a messenger now and tell Duryodhana there's no battle. But he didn't accept. But he gave the benediction to Sanjaya that he would be able to see everything going on in the battle instead. So this kind of doubt comes up from academics. Because they'll say it's not logical and this and that and all these different things. And how can it be, And they may say, no, but he went to Kurukshetra. Yeah, everybody went to Kurukshetra. Everybody was dead. Why won't they go there and do the last rites? Because doing last rites at Kurukshetra is going to be big, big piety. That everybody's there, this and that. So he goes there and then he comes back. It's not that they don't discuss it again and more and what they could have done or what they should have done. What is it? Shoulda, woulda, coulda? Like that. But they'll take that. See, it actually was there. It wasn't actually at the time because they have no faith. So they only have faith in pratyaksha. So where does pratyaksha put you? It puts you on anamoy. So therefore, the animals, the uncivilized people, the civilized people, the big, big scholars and the scientists and all that just accept everything by all of this group is by what they perceive with their senses, that's all anamoy. It has a wide range. It has the widest range. Because it has to go from Indra-Gopa, on up. So So does that make sense? So this is problem. And then it's that, like you said, they'll just argue. And so what's the point? The thing is you can only accept it through devotion, not through your intelligence. I mean, that's why it says every time, not through logic. As we said, you can logically explain it, but it's not by the logic that you understand. It's because it's been touched by the glance of the devotees. That's why you understand it. So unless you're surrendering to the process, it won't work. Right? If they're so smart, let's say you have the professor. He's teaching an MBA course, right? 18-month course. You know, top university, you know, like that, educational, keeping the top people. They only accept the top, you know, of, what do you call it, the creme de la creme of, you know, of those who have the ability to work in that field, and then they teach them, and he gets the marks, and they all explain, they go out, they do their job. But neither him nor anyone he teaches can do business. Not one of them. Zero. He's working for business, and they go and work for business. They go out as middle managers and can work for business. And he, you know, if you've seen one of these top things, he's working under people who are making money off of this. They're only running the course because they make money. It's not that they like so care so much for the corporate community that they should have proper people. But you take that guy, say, okay, what do you need to start a business? You know? And whatever he says and this and that, you set him up with that. Come back in 6 months, you'll see he's living in a tent on Venice Beach. Because he can't do it. So that's the thing. He's a PhD. This whole thing, oh, I can do anything. Yeah, right. Just go ahead. Stand out in the quad in your university and say, I am a PhD. I can understand any subject. I can speak. I know everything. Like that. And see how that goes down. It's a good chance that, you know, somebody's going to call you into their office. So, yeah. So it's just that it's said because it can't. It can't go. It's not easily under those who identify with the body and engage in logical arguments. So that's exactly what you're saying. So they can't understand. As soon as there's that little bit of surrender, just anything, a glimmer, Krishna reciprocates with a glimmer. There's more, he's more. You know, if there's a spark, you fan it, you get fire. So Krishna, anything that you're doing that is recommended, that's good. But why not go farther? You know, it's like that one, let's see, I think he was the, at the time he was the head of department of music in Mysore University. So in South, I would think that that's a of departments of music in South, that would probably be a very respected one. And he himself was a well-known musician. You know, so they would have happened to call those people in. And he was talking to another musician about, they were talking about some concert or something. And at this concert, it was another big musician. And the guy has such attitude, such pride, you know, and that he's so good at music. But the professor was saying that, yeah, but, you know, you have to tolerate it because he's just so good. You know, in other words, in between setting him up, you know, arranging the thing, taking him back and getting him wherever he's going to go, that's a trip. But in between, the music he plays, no one else can play. So he was pointing out when they have that much ability, then, you know, you may have to tolerate that false ego. Right? But when you're dealing in devotional service, that level of false ego will get you nothing because you're nothing in the field. I mean, literally nothing. It has no meaning. Zero. Because Krishna's in control, not us. That's the thing. We want to be in control. No, because I know this. Therefore, I can do what I want. But that's what got us here in the first place. Being independent from Krishna and karma and jnana. I mean, not karma, jnana, you know, the jnana and kriya. I know, I can do, I have the, you know, I got the attitude, you know, because that's what they teach you in postgraduate, is the attitude. It's not that the knowledge you know is any more valuable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, they teach you that academic attitude.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. So one had understood is that no. That's why I keep saying he's since he's the son of a coward woman, because that's what, he's just the son of a coward woman. How can he be God? You know, even Brahma is kind of. You know. Did we do it wrong there? Let me offer my respectful obeisances.
That was
it. Well, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the son of Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, who destroys all sin and who, though fixed in his own bliss with no distractions, became attracted to the pastimes of Krishna and mercifully spread the Bhagavatam, which describes Krishna and reveals the rasa of his pastimes. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:12-69. The devotees, realizing his pastimes, understand that Krishna is the supreme goal. In all three meanings, the word iha, here in Gokula, indicates the devotees of Narayana in Vaikuntha. His being a son includes any other relationship for giving happiness to the eternal devotees. That relationship is eternal, as confirmed by the wise. What is it? Three meanings? All the three means?
The meanings which you explain.
Where, just now, or that was before? I think that's referring before. That was when we were doing the Gokula thing. That was before this one. It would be this Anucheta, right?
Yes.
Unless it was before.
It's not Sukhapa.
Huh? Oh, you mean the three means of Sukhapa? Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, that makes more sense. Yeah, because that's where we're discussing right now. Okay, there it is. See? Okay, the devotee is realizing his pastime, understand Krishna is the supreme goal in all three meanings. Right? The word iha here in Gokula excludes the devotees of Narayan in Vaikuntha. Okay, so that's in all three meanings. So they see him as easily obtained, you know, as by devotional service, or he who awards happiness, or he who is easily known. So he knows like through devotional service. But the iha in that then says here in Gokula means the devotees of Narayan wouldn't understand Krishna as well. It'll be more difficult for them. They'll only see him in a partial context of Mahanarayan. Right? Like that. But, you know, Vishnu they'll understand in full. You know, I mean, as full as a jiva can understand. But Krishna then, no. I am Gopika Sutaha, the son of a coward woman, indicates that Sukadeva points to Krishna directly with his finger. It is correctly said that Krishna's relationship with Nanda and Yashoda is eternal. Thus the verse in this chapter 9 till verse 20 negate the story of Drona and Dara of the previous chapter, since it is not proper to insist on a previous statement which is contradictory to a later statement. Right? So when you're making a progression, the latter statement, the earlier ones have to be seen in the context of the latter, not the latter is different from the earlier. Because you're starting off with something. And so as you develop, then you start to see more and more how to apply it. So if there is situations, I've shown a way that, let's say, I show a basic way that you apply it. Right? And then we build on that, and I guess the point where I can show is that same basic way can be used in three different ways on three different occasions. So now, one of those is going to be the basic, but the other two are going to be different. So now you can't say, no, but here these two can't apply, because here it said that it's this one. But no, but that's a previous statement, and now as we've matured, that previous statement is already included in this, because that position is still there. But beyond that, there's two more. This one will always work, but these other two will. It's just like in Mridanga. Prabhupada took a part of a beat and gave that to the devotees. Means for the quick. For the slow, he gave the full beat. But for the quick, he gave part of the beat. And it works in any situation. So basically, with two or three beats alone, you can play for any kirtan. Fast, slow, this, that, anything. And so that works. But it doesn't mean that there aren't devotees who know more technical, that they can play a variety of beats with all those situations. Right? So to say it's no, only these three, the everything else is nonsense. Or to say no, unless you can do all this, then you're not actually playing. Both of them have a weakness. So, Asad Vyapa Seishan Neti Channa Dharamantarenu Vakya Seishad. Okay, I was going to say, as soon as you see Neti Channa, you know it's Vedanta Sutra. If you say that scripture says that asat, non-existence of effect in the cause, existed in the beginning, the answer is no, because the last sentence indicates a different quality. Non-manifestation, Brahma Sutra 2.1.17. So something that may be seen as lower, it's not, it means the higher, because there's something else that's transforming that creates it. There is a connection, but that's a detail of something else. So the ignorance is a detail of something else. So the Vidya Shakti is there. Then you remove Vidya, then you get Avidya, then it's there. So the Vidya Shakti is what's there. So
This is Arambavada, or what they call Asat Karyavada. They say that the effect isn't there in the cause, which is, I mean, it's very illogical.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's there. You show them, you know. They say something stupid, you slap them in the face. So why am I slapping you in the face? Because of what you said. So therefore the slap is inherent in what you've been said. A latter statement has more strength than a previous one in interpreting the meaning of asat. The same applies in this case. The glorification of Jashoda in the story of Damodar is stronger than the story of Drona and Dara. This was previously shown also. Sukadev spoke thus first. So you have to notice there's a progression. And as you're developing the progression, the later statement is stronger than the earlier. That's the point of logic. Like, you know, as given in logic itself, and we see in Vedanta Sutra.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.